traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome to the Contrarian Investor Podcast, where we give voice to those who challenge a prevailing narrative in global financial markets. The podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing is intended as investment advice. Now, here's your host, Mr. Nathaniel E. Baker.
Retail is dead. This statement is hardly controversial. The last several years have seen retail shopping, point-of-sale consumer visits to physical outlets and stores, maybe not entirely replaced, but in large part usurped by e-commerce. There's a certain company called Amazon that you may have heard of that has taken over the lion's share of this business. And traditional retail outlets, the brick and mortar stores where mom and pop used to shop in person, those are going the way of the dodo. An experience in any urban center in America will tell you this story. Just today, walking down Madison Avenue in Manhattan, I spotted the same signs over and over again. For rent, retail space to let, retail space available, call here. Everywhere it seems, there are what were once very promising retail locations, and possibly one of the most promising areas in the entire world, go wanting. So in this environment, it would take a true contrarian to look at retail and decide that this would be an area to invest money. But that is exactly the tack that our guest this week is taking. He goes by Value Stock Geek. That's his handle on Twitter, and his website is valuestockgeek.com. He requested that I refer to him by this handle only, and after some misgivings, I agreed. But you'll see that nothing that he really says is particularly controversial, but it is certainly contrarian. Is he right? We'll have to wait and see. But the case he makes is certainly compelling. So without further ado, here is a recording of our conversation.
But you like this sector. So I guess that's the first question. Why?
Sure. So I think that, my general philosophy towards investing, you need to identify mispricings. The point of investing isn't necessarily to pick long-term winners, although that's one perfectly valid way of doing things. My attitude towards investing is that you need to find mispriced securities. And if you want to find mispriced securities, the best place to look is in hated and beaten up sectors. The retail sector is now a hated and beaten up sector, and it's mainly because of Amazon and e-commerce. But I think the current narrative is overblown, where the narrative right now is, oh, Amazon and e-commerce firms are going to take over the world. They're going to completely destroy any brick and mortar retail. And I think that's getting a little ahead of ourselves. Right now, e-commerce as a percentage of retail sales represents about 10% of all retail sales. So that means that 90% of all retail transactions still happen in the store. And that 10% has been increasing by roughly a little less than a percentage point a year. And it's not really dramatically accelerating. It's been on a pretty steady trajectory since the internet began. I would say that in, 2005, it represented 2.5%. By 2015, we were at 7%. Now we're getting close to 2020. We're at about 10%. I would imagine that by 2030, we'll probably be around 20-25%. And that's assuming that there's no limits to the current the current state of retail, the current state of electronic retail. That assumes that there's no point at which they won't be able to grow as fast as they have in the past. Meanwhile, I think a lot of it is overwhelmingly driven by the success of Amazon, by the multiples that you see assigned to Amazon. I think right now Amazon has a PE of about 75. It trades at significant multiples to where it's been even in the past. Jeff Bezos is a celebrity. He's done extremely well. Everybody sees the growth in the stock. Everybody sees that they're growing revenues by 25% a year. It's an exciting story. And when you extrapolate that and you extrapolate the narrative, everybody thinks, well, then anything that has a store is completely destroyed. And I don't think that's the case. I think if you look at the history of retail, this is really nothing new. If you want to go all the way back, there's a great article in The Atlantic that was basically about how everything that Amazon is doing was ultimately paralleled by Sears back last century. Where, how did Sears succeed? The point that article makes, and I could send it to you if you have like show notes or anything, but that basically mail was the internet before the internet. Sears succeeded with catalogs, going directly to the customer, selling goods directly to the customer. And then what did they do? They expanded into a retail presence. They started to diversify into other businesses. And that's exactly what Amazon's doing. Amazon is moving in on physical retail locations because they realize there are likely limits. In the future, people won't exclusively buy things online. Meanwhile...
How is Sears doing now, by the way? I haven't checked in a while.
Yes, Sears has been annihilated. It's gone. It's toast. So I think it's an area that's ripe for mispricing. There's the narrative right now. There's the perception that retail stocks are going to be destroyed, that e-commerce is going to dominate everything. And I don't think that's reflective of reality. I think there will always be a physical retail presence. Mm-hmm. But that said, in the retail universe, there are going to be casualties. It is an industry. Physical retail is an industry in decline. But I think it's important to kind of pick your spots and think about how that's going to shake out. So how is that shaking out now?
Before you go there, let's talk a little bit more. These things may be mispriced, but remember the whole adage of catching a falling knife, right? Because these things are mispriced doesn't mean they will continue to go down. And sometimes perception is reality when it comes to investing. So how much longer? Have you thought at all about timing of this and when these things might turn around?
60% of all value stocks work out. 40% of them work out to be traps. If you put them in a portfolio, the statistical evidence is over time it works out.
Yeah.
Some of them will exceed – most of them will exceed expectations. Expectations have gotten ahead of themselves. And on some of them, the consensus is right. So it's difficult to avoid the value traps. Way that I've been thinking about the sector is you have to, number one, consider debt. So you look at the retailers that are going out of business, what do pretty much all of them have in common? It's an excessive amount of debt. That's what ultimately did in Sears. That's what ultimately did in Toys R Us. And then if you look at those that are succeeding, that are surviving, a lot of them are trading at multiples where the multiples would indicate that they're going out of business, and that isn't even close to reality. And then I'd also say that the companies that are going out of business are creating a better environment for the survivors. That is less competition than other physical retailers have right now. And in the end, what I think will ultimately happen is the more indebted retailers will go out of business, they'll go to the wayside, and the survivors will likely enjoy either the same environment or a better environment. But right now, with the multiples that you're paying as if they're going out of business in 5 years, and I don't think that's reality.
Right. How important is it, do you think, for retail companies to have an online presence and a healthy online revenues?
I think it's critical. I think it's critical that retailers adapt to the times, that they develop an online presence. Most of them are doing that. Most of them are fighting back. You look at Walmart with their order online, pick up at the store, delivering to your home. You look at a lot of the clothing retailers. They're redesigning their websites. Urban Outfitters, that's one of them. They're now having clothing rentals. They're doing a number of things to try to adapt to the environment and try to survive in the environment. And I think that the consensus expectation is that they're just going to lose, that they're not going to bother improving things. But when you have this kind of environment, it creates strong incentives among management, among shareholders, to get the ship on the right track. If you recall back in 2013-ish, Best Buy, the narrative at the time was, oh, they're just a showroom for Amazon. Well, Best Buy fought back. They improved their stores. They were already in a very strong financial position, and they've survived, and now they're doing well again, and the stock is up. And a lot of that just has to do with the fact that these things are cyclical. You need the financial strength to survive it, and management will make efforts to try to fix the situation.
With Best Buy, what do you think of the fact that Circuit City, where their biggest competitor, went out of business right around the same time? How much did that factor in?
I think it boils down to the balance sheet. Best Buy has a great balance sheet. They're in a good financial position. Circuit City had a ton of debt. And that's another example where one retailer's demise probably helped Best Buy. I'm sure Best Buy picked up a lot of the business that would have been going to Circuit City.
Cool. Okay, you talked a lot about, you mentioned some specific companies. From what I can tell, there's one of these, and your website, valuestocksgeek.com, is very transparent with your holdings. Mentioned Urban Outfitters. It is one of your holdings, as I look here at your website. I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, go into some of your favorite stocks, and maybe we can talk about the case for those, because there are some pretty – this is a pretty contrarian thing here that we're talking about, and there may be a lot for our listeners to hang on to. So if you just hang on with us and take a quick break, we'll come back and discuss those.
You are listening to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and anywhere else you find podcasts. Search for Contrarian Investor and Supply an honest rating. We want to hear from our listeners. Probably the most efficient way to submit feedback is through the Breaker app, available on the Apple App Store. If you prefer, you can email contrarianpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media as well, on Twitter at podcontrarian and on Instagram at contrarianpod. Now, back to our regularly scheduled program.
Okay, welcome back. I am here with the Value Stock Geek. Before we go further, I mentioned your website, Value Stock Geek. You're on Twitter as well, same handle. Are there any other places that people can find out about you?
Those are the two main places, my blog, valuestockgeek.com, and my Twitter handle is @valuestockgeek. The website is really just kind of a transparent look into my portfolio. Around 2016, I decided, after buying value stocks here and there and buying a stock I thought was interesting and then moving on, I really wanted to set aside a chunk of my savings and devote it specifically towards deep value investing. And I would like to do it in a disciplined way, owning 20 to 30 positions, doing it consistently. And that's one of the reasons I started the blog. And also to just record my thoughts as I am investing. I can't fool myself later and say, oh, well, I thought this, which is relatively easy to do. When you're thinking about investing, you tend to remember the winners and forget about the losers. So it was really just more for me to keep a journal of this portfolio, to monitor my trades on the day they happen, to monitor my thoughts at the time that I actually invest in the stocks. And I thought that that was just a good way of becoming a better investor, to being able to go in analyze my thoughts at a given time, see where I was wrong, see where I was right, and then hopefully people reading that website can learn about it, can learn some of the same lessons on my dime, basically, where you see me making mistakes, and maybe you'll learn from that as well, and you won't make the same mistake.
Yeah, at Value Stock Geek, you have several thousand followers here, and a lot of insight, and like you said, full transparency into your positions and your trades. So yeah, by all means, check it out. Now, how do you decide on what's a catalyst for you to get involved with one of these companies? What do you look for?
I tend to not look for a specific catalyst. I tend to treat value as its own catalyst. But I do tend to try to wait until the selling pressure looks like it's over, and it's usually significantly off of its highs, and that's usually when I move in.
Cool. Okay. Let's talk about some of your favorite positions in retail, some of your favorite ideas there.
Right now, I would say that the retail pick I'm most excited about is Urban Outfitters.
Mm-hmm.
Urban Outfitters is a company that's consistently grown over the last 10 years. It used to be considered in the mid-2000s, basically a massive growth stock. If you look at the last 10 mm-hmm. years, they've grown their earnings. They've grown their revenues every single year. It's still a very popular brand. Urban Outfitters itself tends to focus on a younger demographic of 18 to 28 years old. They also own Anthropologie. That's focused on women who are 28 to 45 years old. They have a good online presence. If you look at the valuations, the stock has never been cheaper.
Mm.
Currently has a P of 8. The forward P is 9. The average for the retail business is 15.
Mm-hmm.
It trades at 62% of sales. If you go back to when it was a growth stock, it traded in the mid-2000s, around 2007. It traded at 600% of sales. And I'd say that over the last 5 years, as recently as a couple years ago, it traded around 200% of sales. And just at the 52-week high, it was at 150% of sales.
Mm.
And meanwhile, you have a retailer. We talk about retailers, like, are they basically just dealing with it and just trying to wait for the pain to be over, or are they actively taking steps to rectify the situation? Urban Outfitters is one of them. They're trying new things, new ideas to try to steady the brand, to try to continue to grow. And right now, you look at the multiples, I mean, it looks like it's basically going to decline in revenue. It looks like they're going to decline in earnings. And the reality is they'll probably continue to grow, but at a low rate.
Mm-hmm.
And basically with that, I'm just waiting for the business to normalize. When I think about a retailer, I try to think, will this be in business 10 years from now? Is this going out of business next year? And you look at this stock, you look at Urban Outfitters, it's basically priced like it's GameStop. It's not. It's a pretty decent company. It's going to continue to grow. And it's just out of favor right now for macro reasons that have nothing to do with the real performance of the company.
Yeah, interesting chart here on the performance. It's been pretty volatile. It's kind of near its 52-week low now, which was 22.19. But it looks like there was a lower point in around mid to late 2017. And then it was in the 50s as recently as mid-2018. So it's really whipsawed up and down quite a bit, and now appears to be at or near its all-time low. So from a value standpoint, or even just from a timing technical standpoint, it looks like the timing could be interesting, to put it mildly. What else? Anything else on the retail side?
I really like Dick's Sporting Goods.
Mm.
Dick's is a great company. They tend to make sporting equipment, fishing equipment, that kind of thing. That stock, I bought it around the end of 2017. I think I'm up about 20-30% on that position. Dick's is another company that's in great financial position. It actually hasn't lost any money in the last 10 years. Every year it has had positive earnings. Even during this retail carnage that's been going on, it hasn't even had a single loss in any of its quarters for the last 3 years. So that's a very consistently profitable company. I think it's unlikely to be completely disrupted by Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're looking for camping equipment or you're looking for fishing gear, it tends to be something that you want to see in person. And I think that Dick's is well positioned to deal with that. And they also have a pretty decent online presence. In terms of shareholder yield, it's a company that is returning significant amounts of capital to shareholders. I think that the share count is down about 9% in the last 12 months. Meanwhile, they have about a 3% dividend yield. So you're earning roughly 12% there in terms of shareholder yield. And it's a company that isn't going out of business, that is priced like it's going to go out of business next year, when in reality, I'd say the situation is it's probably going to grow slowly over the next 10 years and will probably do okay.
Okay, cool. What else can you talk about as far as informing your stock decisions, other things you look for, other parts of the market that you might be excited about?
Like I said, I tend to look for things that are out of favor. I run a lot of different screens to try to look for value stocks, and that's really a value screen that's really just asking Mr. Market, hey, what do you hate today? So other sectors that I think are out of favor that I've been attracted to are semiconductors, steel companies, and you're starting to see a lot of value in the financial sector. A lot of insurance companies and banks have been beaten up. I think that that's probably because a lot of investors suspect that we're about to have another recession. Right. A lot of investors remember how the banks and insurance companies and everything else were eaten alive in the last recession. But the reality is that they're in a much better financial position to weather a recession than they were back then. So I think there's a lot of value there. And really, you're just seeing a lot of value in the more cyclical names. You're seeing a lot of some other companies I own, for instance, like Miller Industries. That's a cyclical stock. They tend to produce towing and wreckage equipment, things like that. And that's where I think you're seeing a lot of the value today. Now, the danger with a lot of the cyclical stocks that you're looking at today that are value stocks right now is a lot of these companies might, in the future, we might have a recession and these earnings might fall apart. But if you look at the multiples, like, and forget PE, because one of the things about that makes PE misleading at a cyclical peak is that you'll see a lot of these single-digit PEs at the peak of an economic cycle. But even if you look on the basis of, like, price to sales or price to book, something that's less sensitive there, they look like they're at all-time lows, meaning that the market has probably already priced in a recession. So if we avoid a recession and it doesn't actually happen, I think they're all going to do extraordinarily well.
All right, that's that pretty much wraps up our conversation here with the Value Stock Geek. Please do check out his website, valuestockgeek.com, and the Twitter feed at Value Stock Geek. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time.
This concludes our podcast episode for today. We thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media, and get in touch with any questions or concerns at PodContrarian on Twitter, ContrarianPod on Instagram, or email contrarianpod@gmail.com. We look forward to speaking to you again next week.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.